And we're continuing our interview with Jean Paul. It is still February 14th, 2006. So, would you say Union County is not struggling, but they could always do better in terms of financial support?
I think they're always struggling. In light of all the needs people have, there's only so much money. And as money, we, you know, it's only fair to say that the money went to the floods in lieu of supporting the local chapter.
Right.
When they give money to the floods, that money does not stay in the chapter. It goes directly to the national funding.
Do people have a choice about where they send their money? If it's undesignated, if I give you a check for $100 and we're still in the middle of Katrina, does it stay here or does it go to the national?
If you have a check that says Eastern Oregon chapter of the American Red Cross, it stays here.
Okay.
If you write out a check that says flood relief, that money has to be spent for flood relief. That's where they got into that big problem with 9/11.
Right. We had the same problems over in Umatilla County, nationwide.
I understand there's still a humongous chunk of money in 9/11.
That's being battled over?
No, that can't be used. I mean, the money's there, you know, it's designated for survivors, you know, and there's money there that they can't get rid of. You know, they can't push that down to the flood relief.
Oh, I see.
They cannot use it for anything else. It's sitting in a pile designated for 9/11 relief.
Does that mean the interest stays there as well?
I'm sure it does.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
They're very specific.
Right.
Lots of times, almost always, once a chapter has collected, met a threshold, National will ask for an audit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you, I don't know what it is, it was $20,000, Union County sent in $20,000, and the National will say, well, we need an audit of how those funds come in. Essentially, they wanted to make sure that all the money's getting there.
Right. Is the chapter responsible for that audit, for the cost of that audit, I should say, when it...
That's always a contention. And a small chapter, if you have to put out $1,500 for an audit, is a tremendous amount of money. Mm-hmm. Usually the national will pay for that.
I see.
Can't afford it.
What other projects have the Red Cross been involved in this chapter, Union Baker?
Well, we're always involved with CFAST tonight. Yeah,
CFAST.
The
you mean the chemical depot? Yeah,
the chemical depot.
CSEP.
Yeah.
CSEP.
So we're always yearly with that. We're in the CSEP.
What's Union County, or what's this chapter's responsibility for CSEP?
Our responsibility is to house 500 people. To show the ability that we have the ability to hire 500, and we have the training that we'll have.
Is this 500 people in addition to all of the response you're required to be prepared for, or is this intermingled? Say, didn't you say that you have to you have the capability of housing 800 people,
right,
for local disasters? So are these 500 on top of that, or
No. This would be commingled.
Okay.
If something went on at the depot and they said they were shipping 500 people here, that's what we work with, and they pay us to do that. I mean, they bought the cots.
Right.
And
do you have a length of time that you're expected to continue to house these people, or a minimum amount of time if you're called on to do that?
Oh, you mean?
Say they're sending you 500 people.
Okay. My responsibility is the same thing as any emergency. I take care of them for 72 hours. After that, I would expect assistance from other sources, financially and manpower, supplies and stuff like that should be coming to us house.
Okay, so whether it's CSEP or a snow disaster on the freeway or something like that, let's say that goes on for 3 weeks and where does your source come from after that first 72 hours? Who do you get help from to continue to provide?
Well, our source would come first from adjacent chapters, then the state, then the national. If there was a snow event that would, for some reason, would last more than 72 hours, or even approaching that, we would be asking for assistance right off the bat.
Well, right. You
wouldn't wait. Because as soon as we can ask for assistance, the national chapter sends in their financial ability to pay for the bills and people.
Okay.
See, one of my solutions the other day was this. They asked me what I would do if I had 1,000 people here, and I said I would request C-130s to drop stuff on Island City Avenue, supplies,
sure,
for 1,000 people. We thought about that, you know, we couldn't feed 1,000 people. We get on a Safeway and say, we need food for 1,000 people for 5 days, and there's nothing there, two or three days. So we'd have to depend on something coming in.
Right. Because they'd already be tapped by all these locals who had a place to stay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wasn't a very good scenario.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, would somebody be able to transcribe that?
Yeah. Huh. Okay, so we're continuing our discussion about the Red Cross here. You said that you've been involved with the board as well. Tell us about your board work with the Red Cross. You sat, how long is the term?
Our term is 2 years. I was on there for 4 years as a board member.
Mm-hmm. So. And what are the duties of a board member on the American Red Cross?
Actually, a board member on the American Red Cross, his main responsibility is generating funds.
Don't I know it? But I wanted to hear you say it.
That's your total responsibility.
So what are some of the things you've done to raise funds in this chapter then, as a board?
As a board? Actually, some of the most successful things have been is what our chapter does is direct mailing, asking for money through that, something in the newspaper. Actually, the last couple of years we've done really well with rifle raffles.
And how did that work out?
Well, it was great. The first year, a board member gave us a rifle, brand new, bought the rifle, and gave it to the Red Cross. So everything they sold was profit.
So you didn't have an outlet of cash?
No outlet. This year we had, gosh, I think it was $900. Spent $900 or something like that on the rifle. So it took, but certain venues generate a lot of money for rifle rounds. And we get a lot of people that pledge money or not, you know, that's just part of their benevolence. They give the Red Cross so much money a year. So we're always looking for money. So.
Sure. I don't think there's a chapter of the Red Cross anywhere that isn't.
No, actually, we're no better, no worse. The Idaho chapter, Idaho is a chapter.
And the entire state.
The entire state.
Right.
They laid off a bazillion people because they could not afford to pay salaries.
Huh.
They do this a lot. You haven't been in the circuit for a while, but
no, actually, I retired out of a lot of things after 9/11 took place.
Dollar coin. I don't know. Within the last year, National laid off 200 people. Red Cross.
What do you think that says about
they're top heavy.
So it's not necessarily confidence in the organization itself on the part of the public who donates, or?
Well, no. I think we do get some bad press. 9/11 got us some bad press. Not being able to, there's just some bad press there, how the money was distributed. I assume that we're still getting bad press from.
Does your board take into account those kinds of things and try to plan for that in the future in terms of your potential for bad press? And you obviously have said that you that that you do exactly what the check designates that money for and that sort of thing.
Well, the bad press comes from the national side, not from the local chapter.
Right. But it's hard not to have locals influenced by that.
Yeah, see. The guy that eventually did us a lot of damage was Bill O'Reilly. He was absolutely insisting that this is after 9/11. He was absolutely insisting that take the money given, divide it by the survivors, and write them a check. And the Red Cross doesn't work that way.
But
he eventually, it took a while, but he eventually figured out that the Red Cross was doing the best job they could with him. But he didn't see no reason why he just couldn't write out $200,000 to each person or whatever it was, and get rid of that money.
Did he ever backpedal on some of his...
He did. Once he found out that things were not... processes were legal. They were doing what was required of them. The assistances are generated by policy. You just can't write out that check for $200,000, or send Junior to college, 20 years from now. Stuff like that. We just couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And we got some bad press. I heard some more bad press today. Not necessarily us, but the federal government. The Red Cross got hurt a lot with their new credit cards. Mm. Do you know about those?
No, I don't. Tell us.
They experimented during the flood. They would give each person a credit card. And it's a debit card. And they would put $2,500 in there. And that $2,500 was unaccountable. You could spend it any way you wanted. Hopefully you would spend it for housing and food and other things, but there was no controls over it. So this morning they said that some of those were used on tattoos, prostitutes, paying bills, fines, all kinds of stuff.
Wow. These were Red Cross volunteers or workers?
No. People that we issued the cards to.
Oh, I see.
If you came into me as a client and you said, I lost my home, everything is gone, I'm going to say, okay, here is a debit card, you got $2,500, go out and see what you can do.
Actually, yes, I did hear about some of this.
So we, as a chapter, as I'm the disaster chairperson here, I have the ability to do that. We don't have the funds to do that, but at times it's easier to give them.
Now, do you think the board will want to do that if it comes to that?
No, we probably like to keep our controls a little bit tighter because our money is more valuable than, you can say that, our money is more valuable. We don't have that much to waste. And we can't afford to be hit by any kind of fraud. But here, we do pretty good. Lots of times, the Red Cross responds and the problem's already been solved. Neighbors have already taken care of the problem. So
yeah.
Churches stepped in, so they say, don't need you. So.
How much longer is your time going to be with the Red Cross? You don't have any plans to give that up, do you?
No. I'm. My wife works about... maybe 12 hours a week, volunteer. Mm-hmm. I probably work that much too, so.
You just taught a class here last week when we were setting up your interview.
Well, I do mostly teaching. Or go to class myself.
Uh-huh. How often do you teach, monthly or more often for the Red Cross?
It depends what it is, yeah. It goes in spurts. I won't teach anything now until the middle of next month. I have a 3-day class I won't teach next month. And then the next day I'm going to Las Vegas for 6 days to go to classes.
You told me that you have or have had some considerable involvement with your church. What church is that locally?
Zion Lutheran Church.
Where is that located?
It's on 4th Street here in Grant.
Downtown.
Right.
And what did you do for the church?
My major commitment was there. I was the treasurer for 18 years and the president for two.
Okay. What are the specific duties of the treasurer for the church?
I was the financial person for the church. I received the money, I distributed the money, I kept the books, I presented them for audit.
What's the source of their income? Is it just collections? Do they have income from other areas?
Our church is supported by the collection plan.
Okay. They don't receive anything from above in the Lutheran church?
No. Okay. Curious that. Where'd you get that question?
I'm just asking. Yeah, I don't have any.
Well, that's a question that we hear both from the church and from the Red Cross. A lot of people think that the Red Cross is funded from the national.
Right.
But it's funded the other way around. And okay. We hear the same question for the church. And the mother church provides funds. It's just the other way around. The small churches provide funds to the larger church.
To the larger organization.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you were the treasurer for 18 years. You present your documents to whom? The board? Is there a board?
Yeah.
For the church?
Church is a church council. And then we do independent audits.
Mm-hmm. How many people sit on the council?
8 to 10.
Did you serve on the council as well?
Yes, as a treasurer.
Is that how you become treasurer?
Treasurer is usually a volunteer person, but de facto, they're a member of the board then. I mean, they're on the board as treasurer. So you become a member of the council.
And then you become?
Then you become what?
Then you become treasurer by election?
Yeah. Right, right. Okay. You're elected. You're elected treasurer. And then it's part of your position there. You're a member of the board.
Okay. So did we cover what were the sources of their income locally then? Collections and what else?
Like all churches, it's collections and gifts. Lots of times, people will give large chunks of money for certain projects.
Mm-hmm. Does the church have some reliability in that area on this kind of income? Is that always
a surprise?
It's always a surprise.
Lots of times you just get a letter in the mail and say, Leon Jones died and he left you $7,000.
Okay.
And that's, or a person will say, I'll build you a new kitchen, but I won't give you any money for anything else. It's designated funds.
And that's happened?
Oh, yes, lots of times.
Uh-huh. You did that for 18 years. What else did you do?
For the church?
The church.
Mm-hmm. I then ran for president. I did 2 years of president.
What does the president do on this council?
The president is the CEO of the congregation. They're in charge of the congregation. They run the congregation. As a representative of the congregation, they're there, the day-to-day operation.
They oversee the day-to-day operation? Are you in charge, is that person in charge of the, is it a pastor they use there?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have this wrong?
No, that's right, but not the day-to-day operation of the pastor. They set the guidelines for what you want your pastor to do.
Okay.
And all other things, maintaining the order of the church.
Okay. Who hires the pastor?
The congregation does. And they vote.
Okay.
A person is presented to the congregation with their credentials and say, do you want this person?
And how does that person get presented? Who's responsible for presenting candidates, I guess?
Usually through interviews. They'll start out with telephone interviews, cut the candidates down to 2 or 3, invite them to come down for a weekend, they'll preach, the congregation gets to talk to them. Later on they'll have a congregational vote, do you want to extend this person a call or not? And they send them a call.
So does that mean then that when a pastor leaves that you actually you advertise for a new pastor? You don't get, say, recommendations from a higher authority in the church?
Yes. The higher authority is the one that gives us the list of candidates.
Okay. So it's not like a newspaper ad
or anything like that.
No. Okay.
They say, these people we feel are suitable for you to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Or they've expressed a desire to to move to your area and they're qualified and they're, you know, there's some criteria, but they present the candidates.
Then the local congregation takes
sorts out those. Mm-hmm.
How many pastors have you had in your time with the church?
Well, maybe 4 or 5.
Who's the current one?
We don't have one.
Oh, are you in between now?
It's been 2.5 years and I don't have a pastor.
Really? What happens in that case?
The larger church provides us with an interim pastor.
Do you think there's any particular reason why it's taken so long to get a new one?
We're a hardcore group of people.
Have you turned people down already?
A person turned us down.
Okay.
That we asked to come. Mm-hmm. Usually that doesn't happen. It's quite surprising. Once a person comes for an interview, they mostly, unless something catastrophic happens, they usually are open to the job. And we say, would you like to come? And he says, no. So, this guy came from Iowa.
I see. Have there been any particular standout pastors over your time at the church? People who have really been accepted or loved by the people?
There's always been standout pastors. So.
Sure.
There's people that are called and there's people that work. And we occasionally get one that's called, and more often than not we get people that are just employees.
What other activities or things have you been involved with your church then? You've been a treasurer and you've been the president.
I stopped doing almost, my involvement with the church is minimal now. I had my influence with the church and it's time for other people to show their direction they want to go.
How big is the congregation currently?
Currently it's very small. 80 or so.
Has it been much bigger in the past?
10 years ago it was 130. So that causes the problems with hiring people, the amount of money you can generate.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of activities in the community is the church involved with?
Well, almost all the churches here are involved with ministerial associations, neighbor to neighbor, K House, most of the social functions that are available.
Thanks for the reminder. Let's talk about K House then. What does K House stand for?
K House is the K in K House is Koinonia House. Mm-hmm. And it's a non-profit organization that's located off campus of Eastern Oregon State University. Eastern Oregon University. And it was founded by 6 founding churches. And they put up the money, bought the property. The property was donated to them. And they built the facilities as it is and it's run as a student organization. It was run by the students for many years, a Christian organization, a non-denominational Christian organization for the students that's off campus, which is sometimes very important that the college or the university has no influence over what they do.
Right. And so how long has that been around?
I think in the late 50s. It's been around for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. And how many congregations or how many, I guess, denominations are involved in its operation?
Well, there's probably no more than 6 or 8. I used to be on the board for many years of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the 6 founding churches are still involved. And it's not limited to those. Anybody that wants to join that work is certainly welcome to come.
Sure. How does it operate? I've seen the campus. I've seen the K House there across the street from campus. It's generally open pretty much all the time.
Well, yeah.
What goes on in there and who actually unlocks the door?
Well, I can only speak of what it was. I don't know sure. how the function is now. In the past, it had been run by students and student leadership. In order for in exchange for the student leadership, they got to live at that house. So there was actually two bedrooms in there at one time.
I see.
And they would hire, or they would allow two students that were so inclined to be the managers, lead the services. Then we got a full-time pastor, youth pastor, and the place is remodeled. And the Innocence, in fact, is doing just exactly what you said. It's open most of the time. They have non-denominational church services there. They have a lot of functions at night, a lot of music functions, very loud music functions.
I know.
Very loud.
So it's actually in a pretty good place for that, although I think the neighbors this way might.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think I would do that
from time to time.
Yeah, I think you used to do that on Thursday night.
Uh-huh.
They play, have music.
Yeah.
So it was very. At one time, it was very successful. I cannot attest to what it is now.
Mm-hmm. How many people during the time you were involved with it? How many students have been involved?
It varied from year to year and
sure.
Term to term, depending on the leadership. Lots of times it was the leadership, and lots of times what they desired the leadership come from the students themselves. So it depended on the dynamics of the student leadership, how successful it was.
Okay.
And if that didn't work out, then the pastor person would step in and become the leader. But that wasn't the desired effect.
Mm-hmm.
So they had strong leadership, they had strong programs.
Did you think it was a strong program when you were involved with it?
Yes, I was there for many years, and that was the reason I was there.
About what time frame? Not exact, but...
Well, gosh, I don't know, 85, I was probably in there just 15 years.
Okay. So up till the 90s?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, 85 up almost to 2000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was on mm-hmm. one function or another, but I've given that up.
Did students contribute to that organization? Did outsiders, other than congregations of the church, give their money?
There were students. There were students that would contribute money to the chaos, due to a fact that the chaos did something very significant for them,
mm-hmm.
And they felt that they wanted to support it, so they would do that. But mostly, it was the churches. The churches supported a very small budget. So,
the house, I assume, is paid for.
Everything's paid for. So it's
so
just,
it's just ongoing expenses.
Utilities and food and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Do they have to pay property tax there?
I don't know. Is a 509? Probably so. 901. Is that 901C?
Or 501C.
Yeah, 501C.
C3, 501C3.
I don't know if they have to pay taxes. I can't tell you that. They pay taxes from. It would have been minimal anyhow.
Yeah.
The facility is not worth. Well, the property is probably quite valuable.
Because of where it sits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Potentially.
Okay. I want to briefly ask you, with a little bit of time we've got here, I hear you're part of a coffee clutch down at Highway 30.
Oh, where'd you hear that?
but I understand it's a gathering ground, current gathering ground for some people in the area and that sort of thing. Is that a regular thing for you?
Monday through Friday. Yes.
Uh-huh. Is that a social group?
Monday through Friday, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a social group. Mm-hmm. Nothing sacred.
In terms of what you talk about.
Yes. Yes.
I see.
Uh-huh. Feelings are not considered.
I see. About what time frame do you meet down there?
7 to 8.
So it's an early morning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have.
Is there a regular crowd?
It's a regular crowd, and you uh-huh. have to be invited to join.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
But how many people belong to it?
Five.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a professor, a social worker.
We'll say no names.
Uh-huh. An assessor.
A forestry tech.
Yeah.
An assessor.
Another social worker. Actually, two social workers, and the owner.
How you meet Monday through Friday. How long have you been involved with it?
Well, a couple of years.
Uh-huh. Was it in existence before you joined?
No.
Is it something you got started?
Well, I was involved in it.
Uh-huh.
We one time we were called the Bloviators.
And what did that mean?
People that expand without much knowledge. Offer opinions.
So it's like a round table then of invited people.
That's right.
Well, that's very interesting. Do you have, in the very limited time, do you have anything that you're particularly proud of that you've done here in Union County over the years?
That's an interesting question. I'm quite happy with what I did with the Forest Service. I think that over time we did a good job with what we had. I think that we published a lot of data, whether it's ever used or not. I'm happy with my involvement with the Red Cross.
Great. Well, I'd like to thank you for participating in the project.
Okay, thank you.